Chapter 14. Reconciliation. Wednesday, 14th of February. "What are you doing sitting in the rain?" said Mark, hurrying towards me. He helped me up and started taking off his overcoat. "I just missed your call. I was in court."
"In court? What about your painting?"
"Terrible rubbish. Don't mention it again. I've been calling you constantly since you rang. My phone's in my bag, stuck in the bank." "Your bag's stuck in the bank? Here, put this on." He put his overcoat on my shoulders. "Why are you on the doorstep? Where are your keys?"
"They're in the bag in the bank."
"They're in the bag in the bank. Jolly good. Won't inquire further right now. So, business as usual." He rattled the door a few times and tried to slip the lock with his credit card. "Okay," he said. "Probably get barred from the bar for this, but here we go." He smashed the side window with his fist and opened the door from the inside. I started my speech on the way up the stairs. "I'm so happy to see you. I didn't lie to you. I'd never lie to you. There were dolphin condoms both times. I realised I've been brainwashed over the years by all the things that have happened and dating self-help books and all the dating advice. And to think that a way to a man's heart is to seem not very interested in him, that you mustn't let a man know you fancy him in case he thinks you fancy him, and..." Of course, the door to the actual flat was locked as well. Mark took out his credit card and simply slipped the lock. "Yes, I think we need to look at some security issues here."
"You were saying?"
"I thought that you mustn't let an old love know you still love him in case he thinks you still love him." He went completely silent and still.
"Mark?"
"Yes."
"I love you."
"You love me?"
"Yes. And I'm really, simply, genuinely sorry."
"No, I'm sorry."
"No, I'm sorry."
"But it was no more your fault than mine," he said.
"No, it was my fault. Now I'm having a child, I realise, on that occasion and many other occasions, I didn't need to react like a child."
"Well, it wasn't exactly like a child," he said.
"Good point. Pretty drunk for a child."
"That would be actually pretty alarming."
He smiled and picked up a bottle of wine.
"Is this for the baby?"
"Mark, what I'm trying to say is, I'm sorry that I hurt you..."
"But this has no logic. I hurt you too. We must both apo-"
"Look, can I make the speech, please?" I said.
"Yes."
"I'm sorry."
"We've had that."
"Mark, stop it, listen. Stop being a barrister, stop being an alpha male. Just be a person."
He looked confused for a second, like his whole sense of self was collapsing again.
"It's you I love," I said. "Whatever happens, whatever you decide to do, it will always be you. I've lived quite a long time now. Of all the people I've met in the world, in my quite long life, you are the most decent, the kindest, the most intelligent, the most sensitive, with the deepest soul." I noticed he was looking slightly disappointed. "And also," I added hurriedly, "the hottest, the most handsome, witty and charming."
He was starting to look really pleased now.
"The most stylish and the best, most amazing shag ever." He was positively beaming. "You are the person I most love in all the world," I went on, "apart from the baby. And it's you that I really want from the depths of my heart to be the father to this baby."
I thought for a second.
"I mean, obviously, Shaz, Tom and Miranda say you have a poker up your arse and are anally retentive and avoidant, and you're always talking about work and always on the phone and..."
"Permanently on the phone, stuck up and snobbish and emotionally stunted," Mark added sheepishly.
"But they're completely wrong. The truth is I love you very much."
"With a few adjustments, perhaps. Wittier, more spontaneous, more playful, more charming, more..."
"No," I said. "Just as you are."
"That's my line."
The smoke alarm went off. "Shit! The curry!"
"You've made curry," said Mark, genuinely frightened now.
"Happy Valentine's Day, by the way. No, it's takeaway from the Pink Elephant. It's Valentine's Day.
I forgot I put it in the oven the day before yesterday to heat up, I yelled over the noise of the smoke alarm. Acrid fumes were belching from the oven. Mark miraculously remembered and punched in the alarm code, saying, Yes, Valentine's Day, turned on the extractor fan and opened the French windows. Once the alarm had stopped, he opened the oven. He pulled out a melted polystyrene carton with the curry in it. Do you know one of the things I love most about you, Bridget? What? I said excitedly, thinking I was about to be praised for being intelligent or pretty. That in all the time I've known you, I've never once been bored by you. Oh, I said, wondering if being not boring was good. I mean, on the scale of things people might love you for. There have been several near-death experiences. I've been on fire, both sexually in your bed and physically in your kitchen. I've been poisoned. I've been crazed with lust. Furious, heartbroken, humiliated, embarrassed, ecstatic, soaked, covered in cake, confounded by your idiosyncratic, though largely valid, internal logic, insulted by drunks, forced into breaking and entering scenarios, fights in legal extremis, third world jail, embarrassing parental occasions, vomit, professional humiliation, but never for a single second have I been bored. He noticed my expression. But am I intelligent? I said. Very, very intelligent. Intellectual giant. And pretty and thin? I said, hopefully. Very, very pretty and very thin, apart from being completely spherical. Spherical, yet brave. You've been absolutely heroic and magnificent the last 8 months, doing this on your own, with all these antics in the background. And now you're going to do it with me, whoever's biological baby it is. I love you, and I love our baby. I love you both too, I said ecstatically. It was the best Valentine's Day ever. Later that night, we ordered Chinese takeaway and ate it in front of the fire in the fireplace. And we talked and we talked and we talked. And we talked about everything that had happened and why. And we made plans for how it was going to be. We decided to stay in my flat just for now, so as not to cause a rumpus. It's cosy, said Mark, and I like the cooking. It turned out Mark had heard about the sit-up Britain debacle from Jeremy, and he talked to Richard Finch and Perry Campos. He said what they'd done was technically lawful, but, as Perry Campos eventually conceded, not ethical. And he told me what I needed to do to get the job back and maternity leave. And it felt very easy and simple, and just like this was how it was supposed to be. It felt like coming home. And then we went to bed. And it was, Miranda would say, amazing. Pregnant women don't shag like that, said Mark. Oh, yes, they fucking well do.